Michael Phillips wrote in the Chicago Tribune online, "From our vantage point, last year feels more like last century." This is the film critic at the Tribune talking about the film business in 2023. He writes, "Did it really happen? Did the Barbenheimering of the universe really happen? How did a quiet, mellow beauty of a relatively inexpensive A24 release, Past Lives, find a global audience? It was almost as if the pandemic was a bad collective dream and we woke up as one and thought, let's go to the movies." I've quoted the play before, he writes, but not this particular line. In Once in a Lifetime, the 1930 Kaufman and Hart satire on Hollywood at an earlier crisis point, a studio mogul pines for the pre-talkie days when he was rich, on top, and, quote, "even if you made a good picture, you made money." That was 2023, and even some good ones made money. That's a fun writing and reading there, Michael, although I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about.
Well, I take that as a pretty passive-aggressive compliment, John. It doesn't, I'm talking about the fact that we had an unusually good movie year last year.
Yeah,
and
I know.
That's why you have an unusually good stack of movies up for Best Picture this Sunday. And the miracle is a lot of the good ones made money. I mean, to get toward the $1 billion mark or above, like Barbie and Oppenheimer, $1.5 billion made, Oppenheimer just shy of $1 billion. I mean, that's usually Transformers 9, you're not going to see Transformers 9 at the Oscars, except for a couple of, the robot version of the Oscars. But it was just an unusually good year. A lot of expensive gambles paid off, and now we're going to pay for it with kind of a thin movie year here in 2024. It's going to be a little, from this vantage point, we're in the middle of kind of looking at a calendar the next few months. It's a little thin, oh. I guess, because of the writer's strike and, the actor's strike, kind of slowed the pipeline down. Anyway. That's why I wrote that, John.
And I want to take my introduction back because I enjoyed your writing. And the thing that I guess I had not thought about before was the distinction you and this movie was making. Even if you made a good picture, you made money. And so the point is that a lot of times the really good movies don't make a lot of money and a lot of crappy ones do. But this year we had both. That is in 2020.
I think so. Yeah. I would say that, yeah. And I would say, too, by the way, John, it's too late to take back the introduction.
I was trying to throw out a quip, and now I'm very sorry for it. Okay.
It's all right.
But it's amazing how much money Barbie made. I mean, are you surprised that it's at $1.5 billion?
I mean, it already, and this is kind of also what I was sort of hinting at. I mean, it just already feels like another lifetime ago. The fact that last summer that thing happened where so many millions of people, I think against their better movie going judgment, managed to see Oppenheimer and Barbie in this, not just the same weekend, a lot of millions of people, but the same night.
Hey, yeah. And it was so much fun. And they were such different movies, too. I don't remember, like, when Jaws came out or The Godfather or a Harry Potter movie. Was there another movie you had to see in the same weekend and everybody talked about it? Maybe the answer to that, but I don't recall there being two movies that so captured our imagination the same time.
It was the screwiest doubleheader of all time, and it will only happen once. It's impossible to replicate. And it's also, it beat the odds in that these two big films that we all, that the studios saw coming, months ahead of schedules, like they kept moving the release dates around the pandemic and all this, and then suddenly they're up against each other, and they both thought, let's go, let's see what happens. It doesn't seem to be the same audience. And yet, it turned out to be much the same audience went to both, all ages. And, I've said it before, but there was a moment when, the 14-year-old boy in the house was having a sleepover, five guys up there gaming, eating Cheetos and jacked up on Coca-Cola, that is. And And then they come down at night. Will comes down at 9:30 at night on a Friday after Barbie's open. And he's like, could you, his voice has changed recently at this point, right? Yeah, could you, do you think we could get 6 tickets to Barbie for 9:30? And I thought, okay, these guys are in. You know, if these guys are in and they've already heard, because it had been open one day, you know, the night before, and two of the boys had already seen it, and they wanted to see it again. And I thought, this thing is going to make a zill. It's going to make a zillion dollars.
Well, I've seen it twice. They got my money. Which movie of the 10 Best Picture nominees, is there one that you saw more than the others because you liked it so much?
No, that's it's an interesting question, because the one I chased around and saw three times, because it was playing in such crazy different formats here and there, was Oppenheimer. When I drove down to Indianapolis to a real IMAX screen, which we no longer have anywhere in Illinois, which is it. And I went down, you know, there's one in Michigan, there's one in Indiana. I thought, all right, good. And I wanted to see it there. I wanted to see it in 70mm film at the Music Box. And then I saw it out at the Imagine in Batavia, which is was the biggest screen, you know, in the area. So three was enough, but it was, you know, that was I hadn't done that kind of story before.
That's 10 hours.
Let's go.
That's 10 hours.
Yeah, and I thought, well, yes, it was fun though. It was like, this is the summer. It's only going to happen once. I do think, I will say one thing about Sunday night, John. I think we're going to hear the word Oppenheimer a lot. I think that's going to win Best Picture. It probably will. Well, I didn't realize this until just recently. I switched my prediction from Best Actor over to Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. I think that's going to win. I think Christopher Nolan's going to win for Best Director. I think Robert Downey Jr. is going to win for Best Supporting Actor. Doesn't quite deserve it, but he's going to win anyway. And you're going to hear that name at least 5-6 times. You know, I think Barbie is going to be shorted, maybe a production design or two award, but and possibly slight chance of an upset with like Ryan Gosling over Robert Downey Jr. But Barbie is not going to quite, you know, be the dominant. It won't be the dominant, or even maybe much of a prominent presence at all.
Well, it's not going to win director and best actress. And I think was it you or I'm trying to remember who it was. Maybe it was Richard Roper, but somebody's piece I read recently about this said, you know what? It's a competition, and who do you subtract from the list of five if you include Greta Gerwig or Margot Robbie? And it's not the sort of sin of the century that some people make it out to be. What's your thought about all of that?
It's a good one. This is a tough year, and it really would be difficult to. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, this is where it gets into. You know, everyone's got their, you know, either their favorites or their folks that, you know, their directors they would kick out. That's a tough, very strong best director roster we have, with, you know, the director of Zone of Interest, which I loved. Very difficult film, but terrific. Poor Things, which is amazing in its own way. Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, and then Justine Triet, French director for the very popular Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah,
tough one. I personally like Anatomy of a Fall a lot. And actually, if there's a spoiler on Best Actress, it is Sandra Hüller from the lead in that. Whodunit/ courtroom drama. Maybe I'd kick out Justine Triet, but then I don't like trading out the one woman for another one.
Yeah, right, right. There's no upside to that.
I thought
Sandra Hüller was the best thing I saw year long. I thought that performance. I did not see her in Zone of Interest yet, but in Anatomy of a Fall, I thought she was just sensational. And that one knockdown, drag-out argument that they have, I thought was some of the best cinema I saw all year long.
It reminded me of that scene
in Succession when Shiv is fighting with Tom. Well, we talked about this on this show a couple of weeks ago, but I just thought that was really something.
When a couple of actors can sustain a really well-written argument that doesn't just sort of end in 25 seconds and zoop to the next scene, and it just keeps going and going, and you just want to ride it for. It just feels like, okay, the movie's gone, and now I'm in real life, you know, and that's exactly the indicator that everything is working, and she is terrific, and you she plays it straight down the middle about guilt and innocence the whole way.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, and that's a film that paid off really well a second time for me.
That's Anatomy of a Fall. We're talking to Michael Phillips, the film critic at the Tribune. 815, John, the dog and Anatomy of a Fall should be up for an award. And one other note from our listeners, Barbie was just another Hollywood social lecture. Wish I didn't see it. The diatribe about being a woman was so ironic. They marketed the doll as the perfect girl and then complained about it and made money off the complaining. I wish I could get my money back, say a couple of our listeners. We're talking to Michael Phillips, the film critic at the Tribune. Anything you want to insert there, Michael?
You know, it's like any movie we're talking about, it's really divisive, Barbie. And there are scenes, especially that, you know, the big monologue that America Ferrera gives about just the difficulty of, you know, in, from her view and from the view of millions of women and men everywhere, that women have a damn hard time just sort of pleasing any aspect of the societal, you know, world we live in. And I thought that movie succeeded with basically very stealthy about sneaking in the message, because it is real, for my money, very funny and just a lot of visual dazzlement.
Oh,
for
yeah.
An hour.
Yeah.
And then it starts getting in, and that's how it works. You gotta entertain them first.
Well, there was nothing stealthy about the insertion of the paternalism in there, and I think that turned some people off. But I was able to enjoy it without feeling guilty or burdened by it. I just watched the damn movie. I'm not a deep enough thinker, I guess, Michael, to have worried about that.
You know, and like what you mentioned about like that whole bit where Ken, you know, Ryan Gosling, discovers what he's been missing out with this patriarchy in the real world. That's a funny idea, and it got a lot of laughs. And then it'll get you thinking, and that's how things work.
Yeah.
You know, when they work. So, yeah.
I said paternalism. I meant patriarchy. By the way, how about this from Hollywood Reporter? It should be acknowledged that not everyone is said to have been pleased with Messi's attendance, the dog that you saw in Anatomy of a Fall. That dog is terrific and much loved. And the dog attended a lot of pre-Oscar events and may have helped push that movie over the edge into getting some nominations. And so this is Hollywood Reporter. It says, it should be acknowledged that not everyone is said to have been pleased with Messi's attendance. After all, being a dog, he was not technically a nominee. Multiple companies with nominated films complained to the Academy that allowing him to attend the event gave Anatomy of a Fall an advantage during the voting. Michael Phillips, your thoughts. Go.
I'm okay with it because it's a dog, not a cat. If it was a cat doing that, I would say disqualify the film immediately.
So. The dog is good. The movie is good. What's the movie that you just flat out enjoyed? That I know you saw Oppenheimer 3 times for reasons you described, but what was just the most pleasant surprise for you?
Well, I loved Past Lives. I mean, that's a really... You know, and if you don't want to make the 3-hour-plus commitment of Oppenheimer or Killers of the Flower Moon, you just want to see a damn good drama that does not take work, does not, you know, it's a very simple kind of story of three people. It's sort of a romantic triangle. It takes about 99 minutes to watch. It's a gorgeous film, and I was just spellbound. A very quiet film. Wouldn't put it on at 10 o'clock at night after a glass of wine. I don't think so, but it's great. And I love that film. I just purely loved it from beginning to end. I was starting to hold my breath by the end, John.
Me too.
As I do with occasional films, like, fine, don't blow it. Don't make it obvious. Don't make it too. And they just everything about it worked. I thought
so. You did not know how that triangle was going to resolve itself, and I think they played it right. And I'm so glad. I was so glad to hear you say that. 708, could you ask Michael why all of us strangers did not get noticed, says Kathy from Oak Park.
Yeah, the British film with Andrew Scott and the Paul Mescal, fantastic, I thought. I saw that very late last year. That's a really great picture, you know, and I don't know why. I mean, honestly, it didn't have much marketing push.
Yeah,
I think it didn't make a lot of money, and I hate to say this, if a movie like Past Lives, very small, Korean Canadian U.S. director, she's a hyphenate, Celine Song wrote and directed it. If that film hadn't made money on its modest budget, I don't know if we'd see it in the Oscar list. I think that everything changes, John, through the years, except that. Mm. Great films that don't get any traction at any kind of box office so rarely end up on these lists. And it's a prejudice, and it's a, you know, it's, you know, if Oppenheimer hadn't quite made back its budget, yeah, it would have got a lot of nominations, but you know, it was a phenomenon, and therefore it worked for everybody. You know, the money people, the audiences, you know, not everybody loved it, but everybody seemed to go.
What and, about this?
I don't know.
847 yeah. said, that comment about Barbie that we just read from a listener is absurd. She was created in that image decades ago. The movie shows we can evolve and grow and improve and should. Was there a documentary movie that you think I should spend time finding?
Yeah, there is. It's up for a nomination. It's not going to win, I don't think, but I really loved Four Daughters, which is, I mean, get this. It's about a Tunisian woman who had four daughters, adult daughters, two of whom joined ISIS in 2015 and disappeared. And what is that like to have to be a parent and live and just live with the mystery of and the kind of the tragedy of that? Yeah. And that's talk about a film that, you know, the subject you don't have a lot of intersection with necessarily,
right.
depending on your life. This, it's just great. And it's not just what it's about, as the Roger Ebert quote I always refer to says, it's not what it's about, it's how it's about it. There's a lot of really unusual reenactments where the real life people are working with actors to kind of create, recreations of like key arguments in their lives. Because they're too painful to kind of like deal with themselves, so they actually hire actors to do it. That sounds crazy, and the movie makes this idea work. So not just the amazing true story, but kind of how it's handled.
Four daughters, and I did notice that you said the ABCs of book banning will probably win and should, though, right?
For the short film.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Nominations for Best
short.
Documentary Short. Okay, that's a short.
Yeah.
So the ABCs of Book Banning, I presume, is a movie about book banning, huh?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it obviously topical. It's real good. I don't know if it's the best of the bunch, but it's the most pressing and seems to be catching the historical wave of the moment.
Yeah, right. Right movie at the right time. Well, get a load of this. I stayed up till midnight last night watching Moneyball.
Ah, I love Moneyball.
It's one of those movies. Don't click on Moneyball because you'll be up till midnight. That's the scene where Scott Hatterberg finds out from Billy Beane that he's going to get to play baseball again. Billy and another coach show up at the kid's house. His wife's there. His daughter's there. He's just watching TV and his career's over. And then he realizes it's going to happen again. And he and his wife hug. I cry every time at that silly little scene. I love that movie.
Love that film. Love that director, too. He doesn't make enough movies. He did Capote with Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's one of the greatest biopics I've seen in like 30 years. It's just that, yeah, and more films from Bennett Miller. And, yeah, I love Moneyball.
Okay, last question for you, and then we got to go. Will Oppenheimer break the record? Will it get more than 11 wins Sunday night?
No.
Okay. No. Well, I'm glad.
No, but it'll win all the biggies, and and John, look, it was just an honor to be nominated to be your guest today.
When we play this back on the podcast, I'm going to cut out that introduction I did of you, so you know.
No. You gotta own up to that really egregious mistake.
Nice to talk to you, Michael. Thanks for your help.
Thank you, John.
Michael Phillips is the film critic at the Chicago Tribune.